I love, you know, it's, yeah, it's crazy. It's like, I love humans. And so, but yeah. I also call the tech space, I love technology. So it's always that blend between the Flintstones and the Jetsons. And so,
it's one small step for man.
Liftoff.
We have a liftoff.
We choose to go to the moon, not because they are easy, but because they
I
are hard.
I have a dream.
You can't handle the truth.
7.
6.
5.
4.
3.
2.
1.
Super, 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 super.
Super you. Thank you for joining us for today's Super You podcast. I'm beyond super excited for today's format. It's a different format. A lot of you have requested this format. It is a call-in format. So you're going to actually ask me questions. So beyond honored with the queue that we have for call-ins today for the first episode. If you want to be on the show, just send us a note. It's an email, eq@equalman.com. That'll be our production folks. You'll either get Anthony, Andrew, or Kelsey, but it's eq@equalman.com. And then we'll have you on the show. It's a quick question format. We'll probably have you on for 5 to 10 minutes where you can ask all the questions that you want and I'll give the answers. All right, Devita, I am so excited for these call-ins. It was such an honor to meet you at the Meltwater Summit in New York in September. And I thought, man, the audience needs to hear your story and just for us to chat for a little bit.
Yeah, no, it's great to be on. Thank you so much for having me. And it was a pleasure to meet you as well.
No, and it's wonderful. If you don't mind just starting with your kind of comic book story origin, because you got a very interesting background.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we kind of talked about this a little bit when we met. And originally I'm from Amsterdam. I'm now based in New York. And it's been home for me since past April when I moved here. My accent, as you can hear, is kind of a little bit of a mongrel of different things. And so I lived in Australia for the past 7 years, and I've been working in the social media and integrated kind of content and communication space for the past 10 years. So prior to living in Australia, in Sydney, I lived and worked across Europe, in Turkey, in Greece, but originally I'm from Amsterdam, and that's where I kind of was born and raised.
No, I love it. And then I've got to ask, I was just in Amsterdam actually just recently, which I loved because I actually forgot my jeans. And so it's the one place in the world where I can go in the store and actually get jeans tall enough for me. So that's one of the reasons I love Amsterdam. I go, wait, that's crazy. They don't even sell a 36 in the store here in the US, but they had 38s in the store in Amsterdam. But what's the main difference in your mind between New York and Amsterdam? There's a lot, but what jumped out to you the most between New York and Amsterdam?
Yeah, well, I mean, so New York, of course, was previously called New Amsterdam. So there's a lot of heritage, really, that exists in New York that links back to Holland and to Amsterdam specifically. So it's been really amazing living here. I've always really loved New York. And I actually just had my mom visiting me the other week. And she said that when I was 16, that I would tell her that I was going to live in New York City. So
no, it makes sense. I love it that Super U listeners are getting some history here. They now know that New Amsterdam was the genesis of New York. So that's wonderful. And you mentioned your mom. We always like to ask folks like you that are having success, what's the best advice you've been given and then who gave it to you?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I would say something that I think about often and that just comes back in, you know, because great advice is great advice because you kind of spread it as well. So something that I always think about is Justin McCowan, who is a keynote speaker and a teacher and a facilitator, and he works he owns and works for the Mission Group. So he works for the likes of Google, where he trained their executive team on management. And, you know, something that he said really has stuck with me. This was a couple of years ago. He said, challenge your assumptions. And really where that stems from is that, you know, his belief is that every action and also every reaction starts with an assumption. So, and those assumptions often aren't, you know, necessarily as considered as they could be. And so they may lead you down a path that if you would have challenged your assumption in the first place, it could have taken the conversation or the situation could have taken a very different turn. And he gave a great example of, you know, as a leader, if you have an employee come into the office late one day, you know, you might assume that that employee doesn't necessarily care about their job, or, you know, doesn't have the drive that you would hope for. But, you know, actually they might have a personal situation going on, or something happening, you know, just that very morning on the street when they were on their way in, that impacted their journey. And so asking why that happened can really lead to you having a very different viewpoint on something. And that in turn can change the whole conversation.
Yeah, put them in their shoes, right? And when you think about it, we're talking, you deal with a lot of companies, you've probably seen this, you're starting to see a trend, which is a good one, is that a lot of leaders are starting to sit down and ask, and we like to do this too, it's a good process to do, is where do you stand in life on a 1 to 10? And then where do you stand with the entity, the organization, 1 to 10? Because it's a good process, because then you can actually see, okay, if they're a 6, 1 to 10 in life, but they're an 8 at the organization, then the organization's doing things well for that individual. But if it's the inverse, then it's like, okay, how do we make this so that it's win-win for everybody? So that's wonderful. And then out there, you've got probably tons of stories. Everyone's got a story to tell. There's stories that we recount at cocktail parties over and over. Is there any fun story, best story that you see yourself recounting more than most?
Well, in terms of stories, I always find that when I start telling a story at a cocktail party, that the first thing that people tend to ask is, what is that accent? So we tend to come to the conversation about, you know, different kind of countries and cultures that I've been lucky to experience over the past, you know, 10 or so years. And so that has really helped shape, you know, how I view the world, of course, because our environment very much does that. And so I find it fascinating, because when you kind of talk about your journey and the different types of, you know, countries that you've been in and experiences that you've had there, what I find is that you have a lot more in common with people than you would necessarily think up front. So everybody always has, you know, if I talk about how I lived in Istanbul, and funnily enough, I actually met in my time working and living there, I met one of the other guests you've had on your podcast, Mike Walsh.
That's right. Mike's great. You got to check it out. Go out, check out his podcast. You guys obviously shared time, I don't know if at the same time in Australia, but that's great.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So we met in this is a prime example, I think. We actually met in Istanbul 10 years ago, but then, you know, he of course is from Australia, from Sydney, and I ended up moving to Australia. And so we kind of would run into each other there. And it just shows you how small the world really is. And I really love that. And I think that can always cultivate great stories. And for me, you know, my personal mantra in life is manifest more. And I think that, you know, the power of manifestation, what that really means to me is that you can think things into reality.
And you stressed a point that's really intriguing for all the listeners out there, is that all of us are more common than we think. I always say, when I travel to all the countries that I've been blessed to travel to, is the one thing that's common is the children's playgrounds all look the same. And yeah. So we have more common than we don't. Devita. So I think that's wonderful. You've got a lot of interesting background. Is there a fun fact about you that it could be anything? I mean, sometimes you have someone that says, hey, I was on this TV show when I was growing up, when I was 8 years old. So any fun facts for the audience?
Yeah, well, I was on a TV show, but it wasn't when I was 8 years old, but it was a reality show. I'm not exactly proud of it.
Oh, do tell. That's the best. That's now everyone's leaning in, listening. What's this reality show?
No, but speaking of kind of moving to, you know, to different countries and things like that, my friends always felt that I had to be on this TV show, which was about, you know, stories from women. And so my friends ended up submitting me for this show. And so I got a phone call, and the producer said, you know, we've selected you, we'd love to have you on. And I just went, what? But it ended up being a great experience. And one thing that I did really learn from it was when I watch reality TV now, which is, you know, kind of like staring at the sun, but I personally love it and have a real kind of, it's one of the things that I like to do just to switch off sometimes.
Was there anything that jumped off to you in terms of storytelling that our listeners can learn? Because as we always stress here is, you know, the world's evolving. You have to be able to tell a good story, whether you're a nonprofit or whether you're in business. I'm curious to know, with some of these reality shows, if behind the scenes, as you say, the way to cut it, is there anything that we could learn from what they do in terms of that storytelling?
Yeah, I do think so. I mean, one thing about storytelling, of course, if you kind of look at the history of it and, you know, particularly how it's transformed over the years with, you know, TV storytelling being so different from mobile and social media storytelling, which is what I spend most of my days doing with my teams, is really that you want to engage and kind of grab attention up front. And, you know, you need to have a hook in order to do that. And so rather than kind of traditional storytelling, which builds the story and eventually has a reveal moment, you know, this is completely turning it or flipping it on its head.
And then last but not least, favorite book or podcast that you think everyone out there should pick up that they'll help them? Favorite book or podcast?
Yeah, my favorite book, that is a good one because I actually, there's this app that I just love and it's called Blinkist. And basically why I love it so much is because what it does is it consolidates, you know, books that are of all different kinds really, but it consolidates them into essentially audio listicles. So it takes the key points that, you know, readers took away from that book. And that's the blinks that you flick through and that you end up reading or listening to.
No, we'll put that in the show notes. It's Blinklist. And I know they have some of our books on there, Digital Leader and also Socialnomics. So great resource, great tool. Thanks for bringing that up. Last but not least, how can we know more about you and what are you up to that we can help push out there to make the world better?
Yeah. So, well, here in New York now, I'm really, you know, we're really focused with Red Havas on building our kind of global presence as a micro network within the Havas family. And so, just keeping in touch with our social channels, the Red Havas ones, and also with mine. My handle is Davita Giassi across most platforms, and you know, we'll be sharing all of that there. So,
yeah, you're sounding great. I love it. It's wonderful.
Excellent. No, I love this. This is new. This is interesting. I'm being able to ask some questions back. So I have a couple, actually. One that I really was wondering was about your, what I like to kind of refer to as screen-life balance. So we, you know, we obviously spend a lot of times on screens and we know that, you know, the average amount of time that people spend on social media alone is, you know, approximately 2.5 hours a day now. So that in itself is considerable. And as a thought leader and specialist in the digital space, how much time do you spend and how considerate are you of your screen-life balance?
Now, Davita, that's a very timely question. I've actually, my new book coming out is all around focus. So it's almost an anti-venom to my book, Socialnomics, which is now a decade old, trying to get people to understand, hey, social's coming, it's massive, and that Socialnomics isn't just about social media. It's actually the way we as humans, social animals, interact, and kind of taking James Carville's quote from when he was helping Bill Clinton run for president, it's the economy, stupid. Meaning that Socialnomics is really just the economy powered by people. But to your specific question, in terms of balance, I always try to go for harmony. Balance can be quite frustrating if I'm trying to have two different things where I'm like, okay, now it's time for me to watch the screen. Now it's time for me to kind of go offline and play with my kids. Is that harmony is where that soul sweet spot lives, at least for me. And I know it does for a lot of people. And so what that means is that if for business I need to write a handwritten thank you note, then I'll actually employ my kids, so to speak, and we'll do it together to where I'll write thanks in big block letters. And then my kids who are young will actually color in those letters. So we're kind of having fun together and I'm sending something tactile, but then we'll also take a picture of that image of that thank you card to send it in email as well to those folks. So it's kind of that balance between the offline and the online. But again, it's really, we're always striving for that harmony. And I'm on the tools a lot less than people would imagine. I've been in the digital space for 27 years. I love digital, obviously. But I also love that balance between the offline and the online. And I know that successful people like you, they seem to share a similar ilk when it comes to that.
Yeah. Do you find that tricky with your kids? Because of course your kids, you know, I heard you say on one of the podcast sessions that, you know, they kind of tend to look to Alexa for their, you know, to turn something on, obviously the kind of voice generation. And then also they don't need their memory necessarily in the same way because they've got Google. So how do you find that with your kids, you strike that balance? So
that's the episode from our shared friend, Mike Walsh, where we talked about a little bit of AI and how the learning will be different, will be computational learning. But the best thing about kids, man, I'm on all these things, is that they teach me so much just watching their behavior, whether it's with technology or just with society as a whole. So it's such a blessing to have them to kind of learn from. But at the same time, as I make sure that I've put in certain guardrails, there's obviously that harmony that it's spoke about as well. But there's certain guardrails for myself. We don't post pictures of our children on social media. For those that want to, that's great. I feel sad for people that are using their children to kind of leverage it for a business reason, because I know if we posted our kids, it would help our business. But it's just, and that's fine. That's what they want to do. It's just not something that I want to do or my family wants to do. So it's something we're very cognizant of.
And okay. And so another question that I have for you with regards to social media specifically, what is your favorite and your least favorite social media app, and how come?
Yeah, favorite app is Duolingo, which is it's a language learning app, Duolingo. So I'm trying to learn Spanish. My beautiful wife's from Colombia, her family is. So I'm trying to learn Spanish. It's doing a great job of helping me out. So Duolingo for anyone out there trying to learn a language. And it's a social site because you can connect with folks if you want. There's gamification where you're competing against people, just like a Peloton bike, you're competing. So I've found that really helpful, Duolingo. In terms of social media that's my least favorite, I'll clump them together. My least favorite part in a lot of these tools I'm clumping, because most of them are basically the same thing, they're just skinned a little differently, is anything that causes someone's self-worth to be based on how many likes they're receiving. And so I can't count the number of people, yoga instructors, attractive yoga instructors, that have come up to me and they're like torn between, they know a ton about yoga or they're a nutritionist, but it's when they post something that's a little sexier, sexy pose gets all the likes. And so they don't like that, but then they kind of go to it because that's where they get the traffic and they get the likes. And then sometimes, unfortunately, it's a slippery slope that where there's that self-esteem comes from within there. And so that's the biggest beef I have with all these social media outlets. And my hope is that in time, we just don't have the likes publicly displayed in, you know, how many followers you have, because I think that'll mitigate most of this that we're seeing out there.
And what do you see as the biggest theme or trend for 2020?
I mean, humanity at a high level. I think that people are understanding that these tools are amazing, but also that it's that human connection, that technology changes every second, but human nature never does. But in terms of something specific, I do think we were just beginning to see the trend in terms of voice search and just that capability of artificial intelligence through voice. It'll be interesting to see not only from the business side of things in terms of if you're doing searches on your favorite tool of choice, whether it's Google Home or whether it's Alexa, doing a search for a product itself. That's a big trend that I'm excited about. And then in time, I think that socialnomics will finally happen. So the main crux of socialnomics was really around, and it hasn't happened yet, that by all of us sharing information, that it helps eliminate us doing the same tasks, multiple individual redundancy, meaning that if I need to get a last will and testament put together, if 20 of my friends have already done it and they've figured out the two best ways to do it, then that saves me the 10 hours of research on how we go about accomplishing that.
I had another question for you. How would you define an insight?
Great question. An insight for me is anytime you get someone to think differently. And whenever I get off the stage, if it's an audience member or if it's the CEO of that company and they say, job well done, you really got me to think differently, that's the best compliment that I can receive.
Yeah, definitely. It sparks a different type of thinking, huh?
And yeah, it's interesting because sometimes you get in a situation, think differently, is that's what's helped. I was just with, I remember this meeting I had with the Godiva board of directors. And so it was the entire board, and just coming in and they go, you're making us think differently, because it's like, you need to start selling chocolate like companies sell software. Meaning that there's people that want chocolate every month, just drop ship to their door. So make it easy as possible. Remove that friction. That's what Amazon's done with Prime, remove the friction. And then also too, that offline online is that if you opened a bar of chocolate, well, first of all, they don't know who their customer is if it's sold through retail. And so that allows them to know who their customer is and have a direct line to that customer rather than going through a retailer. They don't know who buys it. But also secondarily is in that retail location, if you buy it at a grocery store, a bar of chocolate, if you unwrap the wrapper on the inside, there's no way for me to know how to reorder. And that's true for a pair of Levi jeans I have. There's no way on the inside that makes it easy for me to reorder those jeans. So it's really just those to me are insights, is when you bring those to someone and they actually think differently. This has been amazing. I'm so pumped that we're able to hear reconnect here. And thanks for calling in. You don't happen to be in Raleigh or in Seattle this week, do you?
No, I won't be. But if you make it to New York again, or if I am in the area, I'll definitely connect with you, because we'd love to catch up for a coffee again. It's so great to meet you. And thank you very much for having me.
No, thanks for calling in. We love it. We'll see you soon. Oh, San Francisco as well. I'm in San Francisco. My team just shouted at me if you happen to be there.
Oh, excellent. Okay, I'll keep that in mind.
Okay, well, enjoy New York, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Chat soon. Bye, Eric.
Take care. Well, it's great to hear you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to be included in this.
No, thanks for calling in. I know we met in Austin at the Orange Theory Fitness Convention National Conference, which Orange Always, is that right?
Yes, exactly. It was very awesome that it was here in Austin, because I didn't have to go very far and I could actually sleep in my own bed at night, which was super nice.
No, that is nice. No, it's great to hear your voice. And thanks for calling in the show. And what questions do you have?
Yeah. So a couple of the questions that I had for you, you know, one of the first ones was, you know, how do you find your confidence in terms of speaking in such large groups of people, or even in small groups of people? Because for me, I do a lot more of that in my current position. And even if it's only, you know, 5 to 10 people, I still feel like I get so nervous, even if I know the material. So one of my questions for you, you know, is where do you find that confidence to speak publicly in front of large groups? And then another one of the things that I wanted to ask you is, you know, what are some of the daily habits that you add to your routine, or what drives you basically to be the best version of you daily? You know, where does that come from? And then in terms of some of the stuff, you know, especially from meeting you at the conference and some of the takeaways that I had from that, you know, where did this interest, especially in internet safety, come from? You know, when did you realize that this was such a huge topic that more people needed to be aware of? You know, what kind of sparked that interest for you? So those are some of the top questions that I had for you today.
No, I love it. I'll start from the top down. I might have to ask you to rephrase them if I forget, but how to have the confidence to speak in front of large groups. First of all, people a lot of times ask me, are you nervous before you get on stage? And I go, every single time, for sure, whether that's 5 people or whether that's 5,000 people. And what I try to the trick that I have, and you might use this as well, is the trick is that I employ is it change nervous into energy. So use it to advantage. So don't try to squelch other people like, hey, don't get nervous. Don't get nervous. No, get nervous, but just get excited. So that helps me a ton. It's actually easier for me to speak in larger groups, because you kind of get a little bit more lost. If there's 5,000 people, then it's more of a performance. Where if there's 20 people, it's more of a conversation. The second question that you asked is how do you kind of step into, I guess first part of your question was also confidence. For confidence, the key is to stay in your lane. So all of us know something and are great at something, and it's trying to stay in your lane. This has taken me a long time to learn it, but every event that I go to, like Orange Theory Fitness, I will know the least about Orange Theory Fitness in that room, and arguably might know the least about fitness in the room. And so for that event, when I'm talking about how to focus in an unfocused world, how to step into your true story, it helps reduce my nerves to where I go, look, I'm not going to be an expert on this. I'm an expert on this. And that's what I'm here.
Yeah.
And that's why you want to be here to listen to this. And so that helps a ton. That helps you build confidence over time just by that process and just continuing to stay at it, knowing that there is competition out there that's probably better than you as well. Is just be the best version of yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. So kind of the second part to that was, you know, what are some of like the daily habits that you do, or maybe not even daily, but weekly, but just, you know, regular routine habits that you do that help add to your success, you know, like meditating, or, you know, only drinking coffee before 9 a.m. You know, like whatever it is for you that adds to your success and to your confidence, like what are some of those small things? Because I know it's different for everyone.
Yeah, big picture, gratitude, attitude of gratitude. And it's hard, right? There's stuff coming at us all the time. This has been a particularly challenging week. I've had one of those weeks, which I'm sure we all have it. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And so the way to power through that or any time is just the science shows it's almost impossible to be mad if you're grateful. And so just kind of repeat, I'm grateful that I have a beautiful family, that my kids, and I'm blessed because having kids always gives me perspective. And it's a weird thought process, but Dale Carnegie did this as well, going back 100 years, and I found it helpful as well, is that I actually think whenever there's something I feel that's bad, is that, look, this could be worse. If this is going bad on the business side, then if someone called me and said, hey, this just happened to your mom, all that other stuff goes away. All that goes away.
Yeah.
And so it's really about asking yourself too throughout the day. And this is a great book by Jay Papasan out of Austin and Gary Keller, is they wrote the book, The One Thing. And Tim Ferriss employs this as well, is just what's the one thing that if I do it well, makes everything else either easier or unnecessary. Asking yourself that question as well throughout the day, but really this could back to gratitude, attitude of gratitude.
And then obviously the big thing was, you know, your talk on internet safety and protecting yourself. And, you know, I had so many good takeaways just from listening to you talk about that. That just kind of made me rethink my own online presence. But, you know, for you, I mean, where did that interest start for you?
No, for me, it's interesting. I'm kind of a street anthropologist that also happened to fall into the digital world 27 years ago. And so I love, you know, it's crazy. It's like, I love humans. And so, but I also call the tech space, I love technology. So it's always that blend between the Flintstones and the Jetsons. And so it always fascinates me, human behavior, especially when it comes online. And when you start to see people not understanding that privacy is dead and that your digital reputation is your reputation, and that what I call digital stamp can actually empower someone 5 seconds from now as well as 5,000 years from today, meaning, look, these things are great. It's your personal brand. And we know how important personal brands are. And so when I start seeing so many people making simple mistakes online, that's when I wrote the book, What Happens in Vegas Stays on YouTube. And then so many students started using it, middle school, high school, and college. That's why we came out with What Happens on Campus Stays on YouTube. But my hope is that people can learn from my mistakes. That's the whole reason we have this Super You podcast, is to not only learn from mistakes that I've made, millions of mistakes along the way, but also learn from the people that I encounter that are thought leaders and learn from their mistakes and also their wins.
No, I love that. But one of the other questions, I think this was one of the last questions that I had for you, but for you personally, like, what are your own, I mean, obviously you have your own podcast, but what do you listen to even just with music or podcasts or books? Like, what do you listen to that helps keeps you, you know, motivated or informed of what's going on in the world, or a little bit of both just in your daily life? Like, what are some of the things that you like to read or listen to that help you from day to day?
Yeah, at the gym, I do podcasts. So it might be Tim Ferriss' podcast. It might be Malcolm Gladwell's podcast. And then at some point, I hit that point at the gym to where I go, look, I need some energy. So then I'll just hop over to Pandora. And right now it's Greatest Showman. My kids are so into Greatest Showman. I am self-confident enough to put that out on the airwaves that, yes, I'm out there rocking Greatest Showman at the gym. They have no idea. It's not hardcore heavy metal that I'm rocking out to. So it is. It's our friend, you know, out there. We've got him out there. Wolverine that's out there singing on Greatest American, Greatest American Showman, right?
Showman.
Thank you. Sorry, you hear some people in the background. Yeah. We've got some of the teams here today. We got Anthony, we got Andrew. I know Anna Maria just stepped out of the room. We got Sahidi, and we have Kelsey. So they will correct me and chime in when they have awesome stuff to add, which they would do. And then for reading at night, I like to read fiction because it calms my brain. If I read business, I'm still kind of thinking all the time. So fiction, and what I do is basically I am the silent member of my wife's book club. So I read of their books, and I'm the silent member of their book club. So it's wonderful.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Do you like to do more of your reading like at night or in the morning? I know you said usually in the evening, but is that typically when you have the most time for that?
Yeah, it's at night. It's for me to wind down. I'm trying to do it where I'm not physically in the bed, because when we had a partnership with Sleep Number, and I met with their sleep doctors, and they said, if you can read in a chair versus you should save your bed only for sleeping. So I'm trying as hard to do that, but it just feels right for me to kind of be laying in bed to read for 30 minutes. But when I can, I try to do it in a chair and do it that way. And the other trick I'm employing that seems to be working, not all the time, because it's sometimes I have to hop online, but when I'm flying, which I'm flying a ton, speaking around the world, is I try to save that for writing and reading. One, the internet connection is usually horrific, so it saves you that hassle, first world problem, but saves you that hassle. But it also allows you to, one, read, write, or kind of sometimes it's crazy to think, but on a plane, that's when you can actually sit there sometimes, and we might have learned this from Arianna Huffington, but just take 20 minutes to meditate when you're in your seat, when you're in 12C aisle row seat.
Yeah.
Just try to, it's not as loud usually on a plane as you think. There's not too much chatter. You can try to meditate a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Jordan, for calling in. It's so great to hear your voice. Okay. And now I'd like to ask you some questions, because I know that we're sitting here doing digital transformation a lot, but you're transforming lives. And so just tell us a little bit about your story.
So I'm based here in Austin. I currently work for Orange Theory Fitness. I feel like my journey to this company has been, you know, I don't want to say a long one, definitely an interesting one. I feel like my resume, you know, as an employer, if you looked at my resume prior to hiring me, you know, I was 6 months at one place and a year somewhere else and 4 months here and 2 months there. So I think the biggest thing for me, I went to St. Edward's University here in Austin. I wanted to do something where I was able to help people. And it took me a really long time to figure out, you know, I'm still figuring out daily in terms of what am I going to do 10 years from now. But I've always wanted to do something in a capacity, somewhat large scale, where I can give back to the community and I can help people.
And that's why you're jumping around originally. That's why you're jumping around.
Yeah. I was just kind of all over the place because I didn't know what my calling was. And I think the biggest thing for me is, I love being able to help people and give back and just share the knowledge, you know, and mistakes that I've made, you know, to help other people hopefully not make those same mistakes that I have.
How long have you been out of school?
So I've been out of school since I graduated 2012. So it's now been going, it's 7.5 years, which is crazy to think that it's been that long, but I've been in Austin since 2008 now.
No, I love it. I mean, it's hard to us to imagine, but the average age right now they're predicting is that you live to be 113 years old. So you're only in the first quarter. Oh, and so while it can be stressful sometimes, you're like, oh my gosh, I don't have any time. I can't believe this has happened. It's good to kind of figure out, okay, here's where I am. This works for me. This doesn't work. But a lot of folks that they don't realize if you're living to 113, you know, you're just in the first quarter.
Oh yeah. I've got plenty more to do.
And then your journey. So you're obviously going through this journey, which a lot of the listeners are going through as well, whether they're 20 or whether they're 80, what's the best advice you've gotten and who gave it to you?
Honestly, I think for me, it's take whatever opportunity comes your way and run with it. You know, it's all about opportunity. And so instead of thinking of things as like challenges, it's about reframing your mindset, because that's how I've tried to look at it too. You know, with every job change I've gone through, it's led me to this position. And it's led me to where I am now.
It's like tuition. You're getting, you know, you're paying kind of tuition for those learnings. If you take it like that, things are happening for you, not to you, that you're paying tuition. That's wonderful.
And yeah.
Mindset that you're testing, because that's what you need to do is right now is try all these new things. Get in there when you have that opportunity. And a lot of people don't take advantage of that opportunity when they have it. What I always stress to folks when they ask me what I should do, I go, find out what area you want to go into and find the best person in that area and then go say, I'll work for you for free to learn from that person.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
No, well, thanks for calling in today. Thanks for being a fan of the show. And again, thanks for calling in. We love it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I've loved it.
No, have a great day. Hopefully you cross paths again soon here shortly.
Absolutely. Come in and do a workout anytime.
Oh yeah, I need it. That'd be good.
Yeah. Well, I'll talk to you later. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day. So thanks again for listening to today's Super You podcast. Again, it's a podcast designed to unlock and unleash your inner superpower. And if you want to pay it forward, make sure you go post a review for the Super You podcast, because what that will do, it'll allow others that aren't familiar with our podcast to discover it. And hopefully that allows them to unlock and unleash their inner superpower. So that's it for today's show. I'm your host, Equal Man, reminding all of us, it's not what we take from the world, it is what we leave behind.
7
6
5
4
3
2
1
Super, 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 super,
super you.